You know, I was just telling Mike, to get Ozzie back, to get Money Harris back, we needed them to have a chance because they are stars. And the star on the Mets has had a lot of issues the last month, month and a half, Lindor. And as soon, literally, as soon as we took our break, Dukes and Bell of Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as we are keeping a close eye on what's going on with the Braves. It is a Falcon Monday after beating the Saints yesterday, and Connor Riley is coming up here in a second. As soon as we took our break, Lindor comes up, Mike, and goes yard, and all of a sudden, you talk about a punch in the stomach. The Braves had fought back. Ozzie hits that home run, and we were just talking about it to you guys in the eighth inning, and we're like, okay, we clear the bases, we're up, and now we're not.
Yeah, Pierce Johnson comes in, and you get a fly out to start the inning. Then Marte singles to left, and then Lindor. I mean, it looked like his back has been really, really bad, and it's amazing he's able to generate that power. But he is at 4 to 13 feet out there, and I just put the stat out there because we're talking about the bullpen because everyone's upset with Snicker. But again, Snickers can't do the job. These guys have to do the job. Do you realize, Carl, before this game this afternoon, the Braves have got the second lowest team ERA behind only the Indians in the eighth inning or after, which is a testament to how good Iglesias has been. This was really, and you and I were talking during the commercial break, this is where you really missed Minter. Jimenez couldn't get the job done in the eighth. You really missed Minter as the setup guy in the eighth for Iglesias, and then maybe hang on now. You need another come from behind here. Otherwise, it's all in Chris Sale's hands in game two.
They are coming back out with Diaz as He's a closer. We went deep. Ozzie went deep on him. But well, what you got, O? He's coming back out.
Can we just have like a normal ass sports weekend?
I know.
Kind of coming up to talk about the UGA game, then yesterday with the Saints. Now this, I just want a normal ass sports weekend.
Well,
man.
I mean, this really is the baseball equivalent of what you saw in Tuscaloosa, back and forth. It's just insane.
Yeah, it's a crazy game. All right, we'll keep you updated. Stay right here. Let's talk some dogs. Connor Riley, the entire game, especially the first half, I am questioning whether or not is he him. And I'm talking about Carson Beck. And in the second half, I think it's undeniable that you could say the way that he played and with the calm, cool, and collective that he played with, he is him, right? What happened in the first half, Connor?
Yeah, so I'll break it down more granularly. I think it's a case of the first quarter and the second quarter where I actually thought Carson came out and played pretty well in that first quarter. I know they don't score any points, but in going back and reviewing that game and watching the tape in the first half, his first pass of the game, you can't do it any better. He chucks up a deep shot to Arian Smith, and the ball goes right through Arian Smith's hands. He later finds Dominic Lovett open, and Dominic Lovett can't get open on his own and has to commit an offensive pass interference penalty to make a catch there. And then on the interception, Carson audibles into the perfect play. Everybody on that play is doing what they're supposed to. Alabama calls a max blitz. Georgia was going to hit him with the screen. It was all set up for Arian Smith to have a big game. And Arian Smith doesn't run the screen route, runs a go route, and instead that pass gets intercepted there. And in the first quarter, I thought he came out and played well. But then when he gets the ball to start the second quarter, he's down 28-0. And I think at that point, he starts pressing. He starts making more mistakes and puts Georgia in a further hole. And so even though they're up, or they're down rather 30-7, in that second quarter, I think if Carson Beck played a little bit better in the second quarter, and that game is maybe 28-14 instead. And I think that makes a huge difference at the end of the game where you see him and how he played there in the second half. And yes, the fumble was not good. And then the interception at the end, you know, that's just something you're going to have to live with when you're trying to come back there. You saw the ups and downs. I think if you're a Georgia fan from Carson Beck, you want to see the consistency now, because we just haven't really seen that at any point this season. You've seen moments of brilliance. You think to the Alabama game, you think parts of the Clemson game there as well. But we have not seen him, like I think we even did last year, come out be a consistently excellent quarterback for four quarters.
The touchdown, the Dylan Bell, you know, where they take the lead, but you just said it was a bad throw. He's got to be more accurate there. I mean, I don't know if you feel that's a scoring opportunity there. Just, you know, you're expecting the receiver to make some kind of miracle there on the interception. Do you take any solace in the way they approach Milrow and they contain Milrow, or do you think Alabama just lost momentum, or a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Alabama, to an extent, parked the bus. To use a soccer phrase, and really downshifted there to, you know, not keep playing aggressive and opening up the possibility for turnovers. But I think they understood the era in which their way is. And look, we talked about going in the lead up in the game, they had to be more aggressive in terms of going after Milrow. Well, they were, and unfortunately they were just too aggressive, and Milrow beat them. And look, Jalen Milrow is significantly better in this Kalen DeBoer system than he was with what Nick Saban was running last year. He did everything perfectly right, and every time he needed to make a play on Saturday, he did so. And so I think you owe him a ton of credit there. If you're Georgia, you hope to get another crack at Jalen Milroe, because that Alabama team is going to be one that is playing for an SEC championship and certainly in the college football playoff. You've got to find a way to find that middle ground of still being aggressive, of bringing pressure, while also, you know, not overdoing it there a little bit. I also want to give Alabama some credit. The interior of their offensive line did a phenomenal job in terms of walling things off. And if any pressure came, it more often than not came from the outside. And so Alabama just all around a great job executing on the offensive side of the ball and made Georgia's defense look really, really foolish on Saturday.
We're talking with Connor Riley, guys. It was the best game of the college football season so far. Maybe we see these two teams again down the road. It's happened before in years past. Connor, I took issue with hearing Kirby at first say we weren't prepared in the first half. There were some things that they did that maybe we weren't prepared for. And I'm thinking, Kirby, you had a week.
Right.
Like, what's going on? But then, as the game played out, I got more respect for Kirby because he did make those adjustments. The defensive staff did make those adjustments, and they shut Alabama down.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to remember, too, here is that Alabama had a week to prepare, and it's very clear. They went back to that 2019 LSU game where, you know, they went a lot of empty, and Georgia had to declare certain things, and Jalen Milroe was like, sweet, I know what they're doing. I'm going to take advantage of them here. And while Joe Burrow was able to win with his mind in terms of figuring out what Georgia's defense was doing that day, I think with Alabama, when they went empty, and I think this is something you're going to see a lot now from them moving forward, it's just a numbers game. Jalen Milroe is an incredible athlete. Kirby said he could be the best running back in college football. While I think that discredits his ability as a quarterback, he's an amazing athlete. And if you get in a numbers disadvantage with him, he's got the arm strength to take advantage of it on the outside. You saw that with a deep touchdown pass to Ryan Williams. He's got the ability to outrun angles, outrun numbers like you saw him do against Georgia's great and talented defense. And so I expect this Georgia defense to get better and improve over the course of the year. They got to do a better job tackling and getting guys on the ground. But there is still a lot of talent here, and I think you saw that show up a little bit in the second half.
We were worried about Justice Hayes and Jam Miller. I think Miller did have one touchdown receiving, but obviously Trevor Etienne never got a chance to help them establish the run because before you knew it, they were playing, you know, three scores back catch-up.
Right. You're down 28-0. There's not a whole lot you can do in terms of running the football there. And so I think that forced Georgia to play one way, and they're playing catch-up. And even when they fell behind, I see them like 14-0. You know, you come out, you want to be aggressive there. You go, you get one first down on the first drive, and then you go three and out on the second, and then you leave them with a short field on the third. They just never really got a chance to try and establish that running game. And I thought, all things considered, the offensive line and the interior of the defensive line actually played well against Alabama and held up well in the trenches. I think that's maybe an encouraging sign for Georgia long term, but they got to find a way to get better, you know, run support out there on the edge. I mean, they just got gassed all game long from a defensive standpoint, and it's just not good enough. And for a Georgia program that considers itself the standard, that has won two national championships in recent years, they're 1-6 against Alabama since Kirby Smart became the head coach, and it is now clearly no longer just a Nick Saban problem, but a whole Alabama-wide issue when it comes to Georgia.
Yeah, you know, the crazy thing is, and I know Dawg fans don't want to point this out as we talk to Connor Riley, but DeBoer beat Dan Lanning three times. And Lanning runs the same defense, right? I mean, this is the same scheme. And then now he beats, you know, Georgia. And you're going, all right, so that means DeBoer has seen this style of defense, what they're trying to get accomplished, at least four times. He's 4-0. Do you change,
things? If you include Steve Sarkisian in there as well, another Saban assistant, Kalen DeBoer's 6-0 against those three guys who all obviously have Saban ties there. Yep. And it's not like, you know, I think you can make the argument that in each of those six games, he probably had the less overall talented team. Now, obviously, he has great players and has made the most of them. But it speaks to what DeBoer is able to do from a schematic standpoint in terms of coaching things up. You give a tip to the cap to him there. Now, you know, again, how they finish that game, how much of them, you know, being conservative, and that changed the way that they played there in Georgia, making that big comeback briefly, holding a lead in the fourth quarter. But I think moving forward, this is something where if you're Georgia and you see Alabama again, and I hope that we get a chance to see that because it'll be a big game and it'll mean that Georgia has improved and cleaned up some of the things that they do. You got to find ways to slow down Ryan Williams on the outside and find a way to keep Jalen Milroe under wraps because, you know, other than I think C.J. Stroud in that 2022 game against Ohio State, I don't know that I've seen a quarterback play better against a Georgia defense than what I saw Milroe do on Saturday.
And Connor Riley from Dog Nation, we spent a lot of time last week about can Carson Beck be a superstar. He was in the second half, but as we have established, it's just unfortunately they just dug too much of a hole and too many bad decisions, and maybe the receivers didn't help him out. But they got a superstar quarterback in Milroe, and people are comparing him. He's getting more accurate in DeBoer's offense to Lamar Jackson. Is Kirby ever going to have that type of player here in Georgia? Because that's the conversation which you knew was going to come, was going to spring out after the loss on Saturday.
Right, and Carson Beck does a lot of great things. And look, they won two national championships with Stetson Bennett, and Stetson Bennett was unquestionably great in that 2022 season. But, you know, I don't think that Kirby's ever going to feel totally comfortable having a quarterback run as much as Jalen Milroe does and open himself up to hits like that. And, you know, it's a major credit to Jalen Milroe because it's not like Jalen Milroe was some obvious talent coming out of high school ranks. He took time. He developed. He got benched last year at Alabama. So it's not even so much that Alabama fully believed in him. It's a credit to Jalen Milroe for him making himself into this level of passer. It helps that he has great weapons around him. But I think as you saw on Saturday, you know, as great as Ryan Williams was, Jalen Milroe was greater. And if we're deciding the Heisman Trophy today, I know Travis Hunter's had a fantastic season. I don't think we've seen a better single game performance than what we saw from Milroe this past Saturday against Georgia.
What can we expect against Auburn, who, by the way, played a lot better than I think people expected? They did lose the game to Oklahoma, but what do you expect Saturday as Auburn comes in?
I'm really interested in seeing how this Georgia team responds. Look, they haven't lost a regular season game since 2020. And, you know, look, they've come out flat in three games against Power Four opponents. They scored one offensive touchdown in the first half, and they've got to be better. And I think that this is a game where if you let Auburn hang around, you saw it last year, you get them comfortable, they're going to start believing that they can make plays and make this into a four-quarter game. And they've seen that they can play with Georgia before. So I think this is a game where, because of the way that Auburn's season gone, where they've lost three games, all of them at home already, you wonder where guys' eyes might be, especially with the transfer portal as a factor now in this day and age. It makes starting fast at home all the more important. If you're able to do that, then I think that helps out tremendously in giving this team some confidence where if they're up early in this game, Auburn starts pressing, maybe Peyton Thorne throws a few interceptions, and that makes it an easy game. But I think there's also a very real scenario where Georgia experiences a little bit of a hangover and they find themselves in a four-quarter a game against an Auburn team that they are better than.
I just thought, you know, watching the Auburn-Oklahoma game, I just thought the play calling made no sense. I mean, Auburn had a chance to put that game away. They didn't burn enough clock, Connor. Just run the football. I mean, Hugh Freeze has been around. He should have known better.
The pick six that cost them that game is one of the funniest plays I've ever seen in my life in terms of watching college football. It's just because everything that had been around Auburn, the discussion, the turnovers, they're the one thing that you can't have happen. When you're up five, third and two, where you get one or two more first downs, you're able to salt the game away and get a win when I think a lot of people didn't expect you to, and you quite literally hand Oklahoma the game. I mean, at Auburn at this point, they're a capable team. They're not as bad as their record is. The problem is that they are finding ways to lose. And when you get into that sort of mindset, it starts to seep into your culture and who you are as a program. So not just impacting them this season, but this has long-term ramifications on what Hugh Freeze might be able to do here at Auburn.
All right, Connor. Look, this thing got a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, after Saturday with the Dogs, who, again, do I think they're a playoff team? Yes. But with this schedule, Mike and I are just like, okay, we cannot have a couple more slip-ups. That's just where it is. And so it's gotten more interesting. But, man, we appreciate your coverage. Great game. And you know what? I'm with you. I hope we see this again. I do. I think it's good for college football. If everybody's like, oh, I don't want to see Alabama, Georgia, that was an incredible game on Saturday night. So, Connor, thanks again. Tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Yep, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorI. We still got a ton of stuff coming out from that Alabama game and then the Auburn game as well.
All right, good stuff, man. Appreciate you. It's Dukes and Bell. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Mike and I, when we come back, we got to talk about what just happened at Julius Park.
Oh,
now, it is a doubleheader. We still have an opportunity to get into the playoffs, but this didn't play out the way we thought. Mike and I are going to break it down for you when we come back. Stay there. It's Dukes and Bell. Sometimes things don't go the way you expect, but that's why we love sports. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. More on the Falcons coming up. Again, this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Mike, Give me your opinions on this game, because Mets win 8-7. They clinch a wild card spot. Guys, we have to win game two of this doubleheader to be in the playoffs. So the good news is Chris Sale is going to be pitching, I guess. But you got to get in, as I just told Orin and Chris. Mike, what do you think about what happened today?
Well, I thought Schwellenbach was dealing. Schwellenbach did a great job. And then where the Braves fans are going to be debating this one, if this does wind up with the Braves not making it to the postseason, should you have brought Schwellenbach out to start the eighth? Because he had only given up three hits before he gave up the leadoff double. And then Snicker said he saw enough, so we went with Joe Jimenez. And then Jimenez didn't do his job. You know, to me, this is more the big picture about missing a guy like A.J. Minter. Minter would have been your guy, I think, in the eighth inning. He comes in throwing that 95-96, and then Iglesias closes it out. So Joe Jimenez can't close it down. Then you've got to bring in Raisel Iglesias for the presumed six-out save, and he pours more gasoline on the fire. What makes it so crazy is the Braves get Edwin Diaz lit up like a Christmas tree, and right-handed Ozzy has just been amazing since he's come back off the injured list. But unfortunately, Carl, that comeback, which, again, it should have been one for the ages.
Yeah.
Braves score four in the bottom of the eighth. That goes out the window when the Mets come right back over the top. And if you didn't see it, guys, it was brutal. It was Lane Johnson, right? Lane Johnson came in, and he couldn't do his job. And unfortunately, I said, no, Lane Johnson's a different player. Pierce Johnson couldn't get the job done in the top of the eighth. Alvarez pops out to third. Marte singles. And then Lindor, who's got the bad back, hits a home run to dead center, 413 feet. So all the air just goes completely out of the balloon. And you feel like maybe the Braves can rally. But unfortunately, no dice. You lose 8-7. And now Chris Sale, you got to win this one, guys, because regardless, if you split, you're still going to play San Diego. The Mets go right back to Milwaukee because you'd still have the season head-to-head advantage over the Mets. The Mets win, game's over, season's over for the Braves. That's what we got at stake with Chris Sale on the bump. I thought the debate is, do you bring Schwellenbach out or not with a three-run lead in the top of the eighth after he's been dealing? I'll roll the dice with that over the bullpen.
That's fair. I know people hit me up saying the bullpen and making all kind of emojis and whatnot. This is what I said about having Chris Sale right in the box just in case. This is why you didn't pitch him, and you kind of waited it out. Now, you have to find a way to get into the playoffs. And by the way, these series that we're talking about with the Mets going back to Milwaukee, three-game series. We're talking about us going out to San Diego, three-game series. Mike, anything can happen, but you got to get in. And so that's why the Sale thing now, pitching in the second game, is such a big deal.
Well, hold on. Our buddy Miles Garrett from Fox 5 says Chris Sale has been scratched from game two due to back spasms.
Stop it.
They're going to go with Grant Holmes.
Stop it. Stop it.
Again.
Are you serious right now?
Miles Garrett, we're going to reach out to Grant here in a minute. Grant's going to join us coming up here at about 4:40 or so. He says Chris Sale has been scratched from game two, back spasms. So the Chris Sale being on ice since the 19th. Comes back to blow up in your face. And again, someone said, this was another great debate, which will rage if the Braves can't find a way to win the nightcap here, is should you have just had Chris Sale beat the Royals, and then you'll be able to use him at some point early on in the Padres.
Now, I like the strategy, but my question is, did he do this in a bullpen session? Did he tweak his back before? Was this something that was ongoing? Because this is the biggest moment of the season. You're trying to get into the playoffs. You're a Cy Young. You're going to win the Cy Young. I'm not saying Chris Sale don't want to pitch because he's a dog. He has been that guy all season. We talked about his attitude. Yeah. But, Mike, really? Right now?
MLB Network Mark Bowman also confirms that Chris Sale's been scratched with back spasms. Felt it last night.
Okay. And that's the thing. I like the strategy. You hold your best pitcher out for the biggest moment. This is it. But if he can't go, guys, I see Orin in there laughing. Chris, this is unbelievable. Grant Holmes, step up. Somebody's got to – we got to find a way to get in the playoffs.
Alex Anthopoulos just speaking with the media saying that they didn't want to push Chris Sale with the back spasm through this start.
And that I agree with.
The season on the line.
Because, again, if in fact you win, maybe he is okay in the, moving forward.
This has got to be the craziest 72 hours in Georgia sports.
I just want a normal-ass weekend, man. What a normal-ass sports weekend, Carl.
I mean, the Falcons win a game without scoring an offensive touchdown against our hated rivals. The Braves are, one win against the Royals for making this series a moot point.
Oh, my goodness.
And to blow a 3-0 lead in the top of the eighth and only to come back and send it to the top of the ninth. And now the ace in the hole that we've been banking on can't go because of back spasms.
I wish you guys could have saw how Mike was just looking at me as he said that. I just wish you guys, because I'm looking at him. There's microphones in the way, but like we are literally eye to eye. Like, this cannot be. Because he gives us the best opportunity to win. Understand that. If you're just kind of like, I don't understand, he's the best pitcher in the league this year. So, who steps up? That's what this is.
Well,
who steps up?
Holmes has been a hell of a story. Everybody, you know, we love calling him Kenny Powers. But, you know, you're only going to get three or four innings from him, and then it's all the bullpen. So, whatever happens here, your bullpen's going to be pretty taxed before you, if you can make it to the postseason. But, again, it's a moot point if you can't get there. So, it's all hands on deck. And this goes back to the great debate about, I think we agreed with it with Chris Sale, although I know a lot of Braves fans the last 24 hours have said you just should have started him instead of Charlie Morton, who got lit up like a pinball that first inning, gave up three runs, and then the Royals go on to salvage one game in that series.
Yeah, again, I love the strategy. I think they did the right thing. Nobody knows, except the player, how his body's going to respond. And if he's having back spasms now, and then you wake up and you're like, I know I might have to go today. I'm a little tight. You get to the ballpark, I've seen it a million times, guys, and the trainers are all working with you, and the guy says, hey, I feel great, and he goes out and pitches. Or what just happened with Sale is, I don't feel that good, and then the team has to make a fundamental decision about, if we get in the playoffs, do we have our number one guy, or do you just say, you know what, we're going to roll the dice and see how much you can do today?
There was always this chance that, you know, this scenario was going to play out, but do you give any credence to that idea? Let's close it out and get the win against the Royals?
No, because Charlie Morton's been doing it for 28 years.
Well, that could have been Charlie Morton's last start for the Braves.
Trust him. Double A speaking. All right, we're going to hear from Double A. Grant McCauley is going to join us. Yep. If you're just tuning in, it is a Falcon Monday. We will get back to more Falcons conversation and a big win against the Saints at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But the doubleheader today is unique, guys. Everybody else in baseball is done. So we're playing the Mets. They win game 1-8-7. Come from behind win. We have to win game two. And as Mike laid out, now Chris Sale is not starting.
So, again, the only way the Diamondbacks get in is if the Mets eliminate the Braves. Mets win, Braves are out. And as you guys know, if we get the win, then we're on our way to San Diego, and then we'll figure out who's going to pitch after that. So, what I mean, it feels like a body blow. We've been building up to this moment. Well, okay, if we got to go, and it's going to be Chris Sale.
All right. And by the way, Mike, these arguments, by the way, and we're not arguing at each other. This is what happens in these arguments with real teams, guys.
Right.
They have to figure out what's best and how do we move forward. This is Double A. We want you to hear this before we get to Grant. Alex Anthopoulos talking about the situation.
First bit of news is Chris Sale's being scratched with back spasms. Last night after the game, he'd been throwing all week just to keep his arm going. Went out to throw or went to the cages to throw. Came in after and told us that his back was tight. We talked to him about it. He said, you know, he's pitched with worse and so on and this and that. So we said, let's see how you feel tomorrow morning. So around noon today, I came into the office, and the more we talked about it, the right thing is to not, you know, it's not an IL. It's a day-to-day thing. But, and again, if we could have him pitch and it was safe, we would do that. But regardless of where we want to go, we need him. You know, we need him going forward. So Grant Holmes will start today's game, and that's part of the, you know, trying to piece everything together right now with timing of all that kind of stuff. So that's why I'm here now.
Credit to Bally Sports, Mike, for that, with Double A Alex Anthopoulos, Braves general manager, laying out how it played out. Did you hear him?
Right.
Got to the ballpark. This is exactly what I was talking about. Guys, I've seen it. And you go, hey, I can pitch. I'm all right. And then the trainers go, well, let's see how you look. And then all of a sudden you go, I can't. And then the team has to make the right decision. I don't like it, but I agree with it.
Now, the question is, do the Mets, are they sky high off of this one? And do they have some momentum going into it? Or can the Braves find some clutch? The one thing is, right-handed Ozzie has been awesome. Right-handed Ozzie's been keeping you in every one of these games. He's been money today. Unbelievable comfort behind what should have been a comfort behind win, only to have Pierce Johnson not able to close it out because Iglesias was used. And now Iglesias, can you go back to Iglesias in this game, back-to-back?
By the way, please stop with the we should have started him yesterday. Alex just told you the back spasm started yesterday.
So that precludes you from starting to close
Correct.
Out the Royals. So that's a move. That argument's out the window.
It's done. All right, I know guys are hitting us up. Dukes and Bell, they should have. He just laid it out. We're coming back. Grant McCauley will help us understand everything that's going on and the latest from the ballpark as the Braves literally get ready for game two of this doubleheader. More on the Falcons on the way. It's Dukes and Bell. Oof. People are, I love our Braves fans. People are hot. If we won game one like we should have won, nobody be talking about Sale.
Hey, man. You know, and we're gonna ask Grant about this. I just said on Twitter, in a year that is unprecedented in Braves history, the being marred by so many injuries, there's so many starters and all the things that Snicker had to deal with, it's almost apropos they're going to have to overcome not having Chris Sale, who was their ace in the hole for basically the last week that we were expecting him to go.
We're going
to
talk to Grant McCauley. We're a little bit in a tizzy because if you're just joining us, we got word from Alex Anthopoulos, Braves general manager, literally moments ago that Chris Sale, right after the game was over, Chris Sale is not going to start this game. That was what we all believed because it made sense. I need a win. I need one win to get into the postseason. I'm going to start my best guy. Back spasms, which started yesterday, and they tried to get him to go, and it just didn't work, and the team made a decision. Let's talk to Grant McCauley. Grant, we want to start with this news from Alex Anthopoulos. First of all, how do you come to the decision that it's going to be Grant Holmes versus someone else? Is that the only option? What does that mean as far as what the selection process was to who might start this game?
I think this was just a process of elimination kind of thing. But had the Braves known, obviously, that they would need Grant Holmes to start this game, then clearly he wouldn't have thrown a day ago. But, you know, and right. That's part of the calculus that they're going through very quickly between games. This is the first time I've seen a general manager, or I guess team president and general manager, come down and do a post-game availability for a manager. And it was because of the nature of the discussion that had to be, you know, had to go on with Chris Sale being scratched, with the Grant Holmes decision, with the ramifications for Sale, not only in this game, but if the Braves are able to advance, which again is still a big if, how exactly are they going to approach the wild card if Chris Sale's not available there? So a lot of moving parts here. I'm sure you guys have a lot of questions. I'm sure Braves fans have a lot of questions. I'm sure their heads are spinning. Given what we saw in game one, that roller coaster ride of the 2024 Braves, it looks like it's got one more stop, and we're going to see what it is this afternoon.
For the benefit of folks who don't have social media right now because they're driving, they can't check it out, Grant. So Chris Sale had back spasms in a session after the game yesterday, because a lot of folks under the debate was, okay, you had a chance to close out the Royals and make this series a moot point against the Mets. So the timeline for Chris Sale's back spasms.
Right. So the back spasms, initially he felt them in the start against Cincinnati on the 19th in the second inning. He proceeded to pitch the three more innings after that. We noted the velocity was a little bit down, but he was able to find a way through that. The question then became, I'm guessing, you know, what level of treatment and how quickly could he move through those? Because back spasms don't necessarily have to be a put him on the IL kind of move, and clearly the Braves weren't going to make any kind of decision that would disqualify him for more days than absolutely necessary. So that was part of, I guess, this whole process of just kind of waiting and seeing. And he felt like, and this is where, I guess, where everything just becomes a big gray area, because Chris Sale clearly has pitched through things in his career and feels like to some extent he can go. But then as he got into it yesterday and they really flared up, throwing Chris Sale out there for an inning or two and discovering that he can't really go and that he doesn't really have it, that does him a disservice as well. So I think that out of an abundance of just all of those things coming together and trying to be cautious with Chris Sale as well, they had to make this decision here. And I think that real hopes, if we really want to get into the weeds here, were that the Braves would win game one and they wouldn't have to talk about this for at least 24 more hours. But that, unfortunately, is not the case. So in other words, he's been dealing with this for a while, having his start pushed back from Wednesday to at some point over the final weekend of this doubleheader was the best-case scenario to get him feeling better, but he just was not able to clear that hurdle.
Scenario one, Braves win, we're in. Mets are in, obviously, winning game one. D-backs eliminated, right? That's what we're looking at here, correct, by winning game two, okay? Right?
That's correct.
Okay. Mets win, we are out, D-backs are in, correct?
Correct. Correct.
All right. It is our man Grant McCauley, guys, live at Truist Park, where, again, one of those just heartbreaking losses to have that 3-0 lead. Now, this is the great debate, and I'll defend Snicker on this one. Schwellenbach had only given up 3 hits, Grant, before he comes out for the top of the 8th. The bullpen has been the second best in baseball after the 8th inning, but a lot of folks will be second-guessing Snicker that you go with Jimenez? Because once Jimenez inherited the run, he couldn't handle his business.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what it comes down to. And I mean, look, Joe Jimenez and Raisel Iglesias, two guys that gave up some runs in this game, have been two huge reasons why the Braves and their pitching staff has been as successful as it has been. I don't think you could blame Brian Snicker or any other manager for asking them to try and get the final 6 outs after that leadoff double. The real turning point, if we want to kind of get inside that 8th inning for Spencer Schwellenbach, who, again, I will say, I think you take him out there and you go hitter to hitter with him and see if he's able to give you a little bit of something before you have to go to Jimenez, who was warmed up and ready to go. And then obviously, unless you decide to go with Iglesias as well. So that, I think, is part of what they were trying to figure out, was how they wanted to get the final outs and reserve as many arms as possible was part of that. But no, it comes down to the player executing more so than the manager's decision there. Who else are you going to call on in those two spots? Number one, with Jimenez as your setup guy, and number two, with Iglesias as your closer, who was pulled early in the event that they need to use him here in game two to secure a lead and potentially a spot in the playoffs.
We had a big moment with Ozzy, Francisco Lindor. Yeah. Let's talk about him because, you know, again, in that moment, you know, it's like, okay, you just can't give up a home run, and obviously we did. We're up 7-6 right there in the top of the ninth. Talk about the moment that Lindor hits that home run, and more importantly, you know, pitching against him. He's had a bad back, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been dealing with his own stuff as well. And, you know, big players at big times for teams are going to come through. And if you look at what the Mets have done since really June the 1st, Francisco Lindor has put up MVP-type production for them. He had a terrible start to the season, but he turned himself back into one of the elite players in the National League. And he'd been showing that. It was unfortunate the timing of him getting injured down the stretch. He thought that could hurt the Mets. He kind of wondered what he was going to be like when he came back. And he took a big step towards answering that with a huge hit, a huge home run off Pierce Johnson in the ninth inning.
Our man Grant McCauley, guys, as the Braves lose the first game of this two-game set, 8-7 to the Mets, as Grant laid out, if you win this game, you're going to San Diego. It's that simple. You lose, the season is over. Ozzy has been so good since coming back from the right side. I guess we'll have to lean on our stars. Can Ozzy give us more magic now in this nightcap?
And here's kind of the thing, Mike, and I'll own it as well. Yesterday when Ozzy went 0-for-5 and you look at those numbers and he was just 4-for-31 since that comeback, I was wondering and said as much on social media about whether or not, you know, getting him back to net positive were my words.
Right.
Batting him second, I don't know if that's the place to use him. Mm. But, you know, I had no problem quote tweeting that and saying, look at this dummy, because he had two big hits in this game. He had the home run. He had the bases clearing double. And again, like I said with Lindor, you know, big players at big times for good teams, they're the ones that you want up there. And Ozzy has been one of those for the Braves throughout all of the success that they've had, and he rose to the occasion. And the Braves are going to need Ozzy Albies and eight other guys to try to rise to the occasion in that lineup today, because I think this is one of those in game two where you better score all the runs you possibly can, because it doesn't feel like we're set up for that pitcher's duel that it might have originally been.
All right, we're going to let you go. We know the game's about to start. This is game two of the doubleheader. And Grant, we'll be back to talk to you tomorrow. I hope we're talking about us making a trip, obviously, to San Diego. But anything can happen, just as it did in the first game, where it looked like, guys, the Braves are taking control of this thing, and we're heading into the ninth inning, and then boom. So great stuff, great info. Again, no Chris Sale. It is Grant Holmes, and we will see how things shake out. Grant, thanks again. I know you got to run.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
You got it. Now we'll wait and see, because can Iglesias regroup if he's called on to get a save situation here? Hopefully that's a problem they will have.
Better.
Well, this is it. I mean,
Mike, he better.
I mean, other than this, you know, enjoy your vacation, because season's over. Everybody's got to nut up and man up, and a team that has been, let's be honest, kind of, you know, dominated by journeymen has been able to, you know, crash its claw and put us in this position.
I heard what you said.
I said journeyman. Urshela was 1-for-4. Well, Laureano was 3-for-5 in this game. But again, you had this amazing comeback.
There's going to be an explosion of runs here.
Pierce Johnson I'm mad at him. I'm mad at Jimenez. But, man, we need mullet boy. We need eastbound and down to bring it, man.
The Mets pitcher tonight has a 10 ERA.
Well, they're in. Mets are going to play
yes, they are. They're going to play.
Now, if they beat us, they get to San Diego. Pick your poison for the Mets. You want the Milwaukee, or you want the Padres?
You want the Brewers. All right. More to get to, including what a win it was at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But I have my concerns. I've been addressing them all day long. Some Falcon fans are not liking what I'm saying.
Uh-oh.
But we got to say
it's a win. We won. We beat the Saints.
What's that phrase we use on this show? Needed to be said.
It needed to be said.
All right. We'll talk about our Falcons and their win over the Saints coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.